Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and I'm joined by Alex Brown. Hey, Alex, how are things this week?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
So this is the Wiretaps episode for Monday, December 9th. And boy, did we have quite the week last week with Chicago Booth and Yale SOM getting their round one decisions out. A lot of stuff happening. You know, obviously, the site lit up with both, acceptances, wait lists, and unfortunately some rejections. So those two schools kind of first out of the gate in terms of round one notifications. What's going on though this week? Because I feel like you said to me that there are a lot of decisions coming our way this week.
Yeah, like you said, last week was pretty exciting to see Yale and Booth release those round one decisions. I guess it behooves to note that LBS and INSEAD have done this in previous weeks. So these aren't absolutely the first, but they're the first in what we call the decision week. So last week, this upcoming week, and next week is where we see the bulk of activity for final decisions for round one candidates. And next week is, this week is definitely the largest of those 3 weeks. We've got Harvard and Stanford releasing round one decisions, Kellogg, Darden, Haas, Tuck, amongst the other schools releasing decisions, and I could go on. I mean, it's going to be a big week this week, which is really exciting. It's great to see candidates sharing these decisions, and then sort of speculating and sort of communicating with each other, and you know, addressing scholarship issues and various other things. It always makes me laugh a bit, Graham. You know, everybody's very anxious about getting an admit, but as soon as they get an admit, they're like, "All right, do I get any money?" Like they kind of move on so quickly to the next
thing to worry about. Yeah,
And it's like this week, you know, the money is not even a thought. It's, can I just get in or not? But now, boom, as soon as they get in, the conversation switches. But I think it's fantastic. And we see a lot of activity on Livewire for these three what we call decision weeks. And then obviously also on DecisionWire, Graham. And we need to push that up a little bit. And I know we're going to do that in this podcast today as we look at one of the DecisionWire entries. But now candidates will start sharing some of their decisions, and some of those are undecided, and they're trying to debate, should I go to school X, but school Y offer me money, and school Z is OPT3 or whatever it's called. And, you know, all of a sudden the decision becomes very granular and not so straightforward like a ranking would presume. So it's very interesting time for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you've kind of pulled back the veil that we're going to do something different in this episode of Wiretaps, and that we're still going to talk about a couple of ApplyWire posts and just evaluate those candidates and give them advice on, you know, what looked to be their kind of round two application strategies. But we're going to also look at a DecisionWire entry from the site. And as Alex, you know, as you just outlined, I mean, basically DecisionWire is the place you go when you've gotten in. You indicate where you applied, where you got in, how much money you've been offered, and where you're going. Or if you're undecided, you just check undecided and you indicate your career goals and some other facts and figures to help the community give you feedback. So basically, we're going to break down one of those entries and try to weigh in on a debate. And we expect that DecisionWire will light up later this month when all the decisions are out and people really have all the information at hand to begin debating where they want to go. So anything else, though? I mean, the only other thing I wanted to mention is we did run an article that I wanted to call people's attention to last week about Duke's employment report. They broke some records in terms of placement stats, and we just keep seeing this over and over again with leading schools. So even though we hear a lot about declines in application volume, hand in hand with that, we hear that, you know, the schools are just having a real run on placement stats, and that makes sense, right? Because the economy's hot, jobs are, you know, jobs are plentiful, and employers are willing to pay top dollar for MBAs. And we always see this when application volume goes down. It's because the economy's hot and the opportunity cost to leave is higher. But any thoughts on that, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, it's a very interesting sort of phenomena when the economy is hot because applications go down. So you would think maybe it's going to be slightly easier to get into a top program. And the outcome of getting into a top program is actually better with the because there's such a strong economy, they're getting better starting salaries from the get-go. I guess the other dynamic in that is the opportunity cost also goes a little higher when you're ducking out of the economy for a couple of years. But nevertheless, great news out of Duke, and we've seen this, I think, from a number of schools now to this point. So it does say good things about what the MBA can do for top candidates.
Agreed. All right. So without further ado, let's dive in. We're going to do a couple of ApplyWire entries for wiretaps here. And I know you selected these two. So let's dive in on wiretaps candidate number one. So this person's looking to start next fall, currently working in real estate, but wants to pivot into venture capital or maybe private equity, hoping to target companies like Sequoia Capital or KKR. GMAT score 760. GPA 3.7, 5 years of work experience, and this person's located in Chicago but doesn't seem to have a preference about where they land, and they're targeting Harvard Business School, MIT Sloan, Stanford, UChicago, and Wharton. So you had some dialogue with this individual. They did kind of outline the fact that they did, they kind of moved around a bit. That was one thing that did strike me. I mean, he did a kind of Bank of America job in New York for a year out of college, then, went on to do consulting for a year. So kind of some instability, I would argue, at the outset of their career. And then the last 2.5 years they've been in real estate. So they're just trying to understand, like, what are their chances of getting into one of these top schools? And, what do we think about this whole real estate to venture capital, private equity plan. So what's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, clearly the obvious factors, certainly their stats, make it look like this person needs to go to a top program. And for their goals, as you said, venture capital, private equity, they have to go to a top program, otherwise they're just not going to be able to realize those ambitious goals. So that's quite interesting. You said that maybe it looks like at the beginning of their career they jumped around a little bit. I'll just read one little snippet from their notes section and get your take on this. In real estate, and this is a direct quote, I work on acquisitions and have sourced deals equivalent to $1.1 billion in construction value. What does that mean?
I think it means that they've helped to either raise money with developers to pursue probably commercial real estate projects that are valued at about $1.1 billion. So yeah, big numbers. I mean, obviously not small, not child's play.
I mean, to me that does sound impressive, Graham. And I guess I asked you the question.
Sure.
Because the person wants to make a switch to private equity. Or something more entrepreneurial, which is basically exactly what they said, some kind of investment fund, running their own PE investment fund and so forth. That current experience, how do you see it in relation to a private equity or an investment fund experience?
I mean, I guess, yeah, there are similarities, right? There's the fundraising aspect. And I mean, I think these are all finance-oriented roles. I mean, obviously, there's a difference between assessing the value of a real estate project or, a kind of real estate market versus the viability of a business plan in any number of sectors, that a VC might be investigating. But I think, obviously it's not so far flung. It's funny you're asking these questions because my issue with this candidate, and I mean, obviously seems like a really qualified individual and, looking at top schools, et cetera. But my issue was that, because they don't want to continue doing real estate, there's sort of a, I kind of felt too bad about that because I thought, well, here they kind of floated a bit at the beginning of their career, then they land for the last 2.5 years in real estate. As you say, they've done some impressive things in that domain. And I'm thinking, okay, there's going to be a real estate kind of goal here for the career, which would allow them to differentiate. I mean, there's so many candidates who are kind of like, oh, I want to get into private equity, but real estate's a little less common. And I thought, oh, this could be, you know, an interesting thing. Like, I tried banking, did some consulting, but I really found my niche in real estate and I love it. And that's why I'm looking at, you know, obviously Wharton has a great real estate program, some other schools, Columbia, Cornell. I mean, there are a number of schools that are good at that stuff. And I thought, here's the, plus this guy's a musician, which I'm partial to, and, you know, he has like all the ingredients, but then I'm balking a little bit at believing in the ability to tell the right kind of story in the essays. I mean, I know that the schools on his or her list, I think it's a guy, but I'm not sure about that. But the schools on the list are the schools that do well when it comes to placing with VC or PE. But it's never easy. I mean, we've talked about that repeatedly on the podcast. So it's never easy to get a job in that domain. And I think it's even harder if you're not coming from that domain. And so I just was a little worried about the goals. And I thought, you know, if this person had a real estate story to tell, they might have a better path to business school. But I don't know. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, I would completely agree with that. But I think there is a potential pathway, right, in terms of private equity in the real estate domain. And he or she mentions in the comments section, would it be best to describe the career switch as real estate to an area of private equity VC with a focus on real estate to utilize that real estate background? And I would think absolutely yes. I mean, it would be better if that's truly what you want to do and therefore you can be passionate about it and drive the case home. But certainly, as you say, Graham, I think that's a better, more viable pathway to convince the outcome that they're going to be successful in the MBA to do what they want to do than just PEVC without that focus in real estate. So I think we agree on that point, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I don't want to tell someone to kind of make up a path that's not what they're passionate about.
Exactly.
So it's tricky, right? But I think it'd be great if there was a way, I don't know, if there's some, I don't know, if there's something that they've seen in their real estate career that has drawn them to a specific sector. Like maybe there's a PE fund out there or two that do roll-ups of construction companies or, you know, something related that would allow them to sort of draw a kind of, can have a thread that's sort of a common thread other than just, yes, these are finance intense roles and stuff. So anyway, I mean, obviously this is a great candidate, 763.7, 5 years of work experience, even though they moved around a bit at the beginning, that, you know, they settled in somewhere. So they have the makings. And I love the fact that, you know, they point out they play music, not only do they play music, but they're playing concerts to raise funds for Doctors Without Borders.
I mean, that stuff is dynamite.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a great candidate, and they could probably go wherever they want. I just want to make sure they have a storyline that is appealing. And, I don't know why, but in reading the kind of background, I couldn't help but think, okay, this is probably white male from Chicago, okay? And so, you know, there's a high bar for those candidates. And so I just want to make sure they can really dot all their I's and cross their T's. So anything else on this one?
In case anyone thinks Graham's super, super smart, the person does indicate they are from Chicago.
Yes, sorry.
Yes. I would say, in one of my pieces of advice to the candidate, and you can comment on this, Graham, is to explore their networks now, see who's doing a role that's interesting to them post-MBA, and see if they can network with that person, learn more about it, and so on and so forth. And this gets back to the point of, if there is an opportunity to remain within the real estate domain through the current networks whilst pursuing private equity, and that, you know, hopefully I'm making sense, but really investigate this person should be investigating their networks to look at people that are doing what they want to do post MBA and make sure it is viable.
Yeah, that's good feedback. And the only last bit of advice I would give that person is, I thought it was interesting, the school selection, I mean, they kind of went for what you could argue are sort of top, you know, top five or so schools, right? But it was, if they're going to go with the goals as they've expressed them in this entry on our site, I wondered, like, you know, well, why isn't Kellogg on the list? This person's in Chicago, not a bad school for this stuff too. And they didn't have Columbia either, which again, you know, they want to do private equity VC. So I obviously they can't apply everywhere.
And real estate, Columbia would be good for real estate too.
Yeah, exactly. So, All right, well, let's move on, and obviously best of luck to that person. And now let's move on and discuss Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person is also looking to start next fall. They currently are working in a kind of engineering role, but they've become a business manager. So this classic kind of, oh, engineering moved into kind of more of a management role. They want to make a pivot into consulting and maybe eventually entrepreneurship post-MBA. The numbers are a 730 on the GMAT, a 310 GPA, and they have 5 years of work experience located in the Northeast, and they're applying to Harvard, Chicago, and Wharton. They were a chemical engineering major with a minor in econ. They mentioned that the GPA is low, and they're wondering, you know, does the major help because of that? And, you know, they've worked in an engineering company, but have kind of worked their way up, as I said, and very active extracurricularly in college with Greek life, which I do want to talk about as we discuss this, and continue to do some things with their fraternity. They're on some sort of an alumni board, and they do some, looks like tutoring of underprivileged high school kids to help them get on the path to college. So you did leave this person a couple of comments, but what do you make of this candidate? Because I have a lot of thoughts here.
I like this candidate. I mean, chemical engineering is a tough degree. I think we can all agree on the scale of toughness for different types of degrees. Chemical engineering is definitely on the higher end. Obviously, the 3-1 is what the candidate's worried about, and you know, again, you could talk to that a little bit more if you like, Graham. They did say they're very busy in college with extracurriculars and so on and so forth, which may have taken some time away. I don't think that's really a good excuse in of itself, because in an MBA program, we want the candidates to do well academically whilst also being busy and doing stuff in the extracurriculars. So they definitely have to hit that balance just right. I did want to give a nod to this candidate in terms of why we're featuring this person, because they said, finally, I love the podcast and listen every week. So that's very important to recognise. The list of schools, Harvard, Chicago, Wharton, I think, you know, that's a little, that needs developing and broadening out a little bit. I imagine their work experience is good. They in a management role now, they've been in engineering, and it makes sense to me that they want to get into consulting post-MBA to broaden out their skill set. What I don't really know, and whether this candidate's really thought this through yet, is what is the long-term goal? There is a mention of entrepreneurship, but I'm not getting the sense that the candidate has an idea about which they're passionate, and they're sort of setting themselves up, you know, go to business school, do some consulting, broaden out, and then pursue whatever it is that they're passionate about pursuing. And that's what I really like to see to some extent with entrepreneurs. But yeah, so those are some of my brief thoughts, Graham, but why don't I flip it back to you? Because obviously you had some thoughts with the Greek activity in school and some other issues.
Yeah, so first of all, on the academic front, I absolutely agree that chemical engineering, minor in econ, assuming this is from a great school or even a good school, there's some forgiveness around that. But 3-1 is pretty low, right? So, I mean, it's like a lot of these schools have averages that are 3.5, 3.6. And so if someone's like at a 3.3, okay. But I am a little worried about the GPA. I think, you know, it's funny, the GMAT 730 is a good score. I mean, obviously, I know for you and me, we always laugh because, you know, the averages at the top schools used to be like 690 or 680, and, you know, now they're 730. And so the only thing I worry about with this candidate is that the GMAT it's somewhat pedestrian for these top schools on their list, right? It's not like, I mean, if they were applying to other schools, I'd say differently, but the schools they have on their list are the very best programs, or some of the very best. And so I sort of thought, you know, normally, if you're going to be below average in one area of academics, like your GPA, you want to be above average in the other. And this person, as sad as it sounds to say, is not above average on the GMAT for the schools that they're targeting. So I was worried about that. I also, you know, I guess this is the episode in which the two ApplyWire posts that we're looking at are probably both kind of white guys. At least it seems that way. I mean, we didn't get all the details from either of them, but I'm guessing that that's the case. And so I'm just a little worried about how does this person stand out given somewhat, you know, low numbers on the GPA, average number on the GMAT. And then they have a very short list of schools and they're all the very, you know, kind of top schools. So it makes me nervous. And then the goals that they have are kind of fuzzy, right? They don't really have a kind of clear, I mean, I get that a typical thing to do for an engineer, move over into consulting, but then like, what are they passionate about? What do they want to do long term? And I absolutely agree with you. I was busy in college doing extracurriculars. Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, people are busy in business school too. And so are you saying you're going to get a 3-1 in business school? Because if you are, then that's not going to cut it either, right? So there's some issues there. The last thing that and this is why I was kind of making the assumption that this is a male. Obviously, there's some discussion about fraternities, right? So we know it's a guy. and I hate to say it. And I think you have to remember that the person reading your file in an MBA admissions office is usually not like a business person. There's someone who's, you know, maybe from, you know, education or, you know, they often have degrees in like social sciences or liberal arts and I worry, I mean, I know you worked in the field and so did I, but I think a lot of our colleagues were female who are reading these files. And whenever I hear fraternity, I just think of kind of keg parties. And so I always worry that someone is like, oh, I was really active in Greek life. And the first thing that I think the average admissions officer at a top school thinks is, okay, so you're out drinking with the boys every weekend. So, and I know fraternities do so much more than that. They do, you know, community outreach, and it's there's obviously a positive side to it, but it's one of these somewhat touchy subjects that depending on your admissions reader could go either way. And so, yeah, I just, all that stuff together made me worried that this candidate may not have the right list of schools assembled here. And I sort of wondered, you know, yeah, should they be branching out into some maybe non-M7 schools? I'm not sure. I mean, you mentioned, I think in your comment that they might want to consider, was this the one where you mentioned maybe Tuck or I don't know if there were other schools, but yeah, looking at, I mean, there are a lot of schools, Darden, Tuck, Duke, all these schools do really well placing people into consulting roles.
And quite honestly, this candidate's profile, I think they'd thrive in programs like that. They'd really do well. And those programs, again, like Tuck and Ross and Duke, Darden, I mean, they place so well in consulting. So they're going to be able to get this person, in the short run anyway, to where they want to be. So, I think that's smart, is to look at a few other programs. And let us know, what is this long-term goal? Why are you going to business school? It's great that you want to do a bit of consulting and whatever, but, you know, there must be something more to it than that in the long run. And candidates really need to, do a lot of soul searching and figure that out, I think, before the application, in order to maximize their opportunities in the application. I mean, this candidate will land somewhere, and will land somewhere in a very, very good school. But we'll do himself much better service by thinking long and hard about this a little bit more, I think, before pulling the trigger.
Yeah, and I don't want to, I know this is tough, right? We're giving feedback. We try to be brutally honest, and I know it's not always easy, you know, to hear the feedback. But I obviously, this person has a lot going for them. I'm really impressed by the work experience and the rise. Yeah,
I'm betting this work experience is very strong, Graham.
Yeah, I mean, you don't rise out of an engineering role into management without having some people skills. And so, I mean, this person's already cross the hurdle that a lot of candidates are unable to cross. You know, you see a lot of engineers applying to business school who are still doing very technical work and have no managerial. So there's a lot going for this candidate. I just was worried that based on the fact that they have these like really top schools and yet some academic concern in terms of the average, you know, numbers and things. I just want to make sure that they got to get the goals nailed down. They might want to add a school or two outside of the M7. And some of the EC's extracurriculars seem great. I mean, this current thing they're doing with the college, the high school kids, getting them off to college is great. So there's a lot to like here. We try to be like brutally honest on the podcast here. So hopefully that's taken well. And I love the fact that they listen to the show. And again, our goal is to help.
Hopefully they keep listening, Graham. That would be a bit of a problem if this is the last show they listen to.
No. All right. So let's move on. So this is the first week that we're going to kind of deviate from the script, and we're going to actually unpack a Decision Wire entry where a candidate has, you know, been given some offers. And so for our third kind of wiretaps profile, let's take a look at wiretaps candidate number three. So this person, is going to be starting school next fall, and they posted to Decision Wire indicating that they'd been accepted early decision to Columbia. They'd also been accepted early to Duke, and Duke has offered them a scholarship. It looks like it's $30,000. They applied to some other schools as well, but were not accepted to Stanford, don't yet have word from Cornell, and are still waiting on Wharton. And this person wants to do investment banking, hoping to work at Bank of America, Citibank, Goldman, Credit Suisse. I mean, they basically listed all the leading investment banks, Merrill, Morgan, GRE 324, and they really feel like they're kind of in a in a tough spot because they had to deposit for early decision at Columbia, and they have this offer from Duke, but the deposit for Duke is due any day now. And so they're kind of like, what do I do? And they're still kind of maybe waiting on Wharton. So there are a lot of factors here, and they wondered, you know, should they, like, how to navigate this? You know, like, they were invited to interview at Cornell, and they're like, well, should I go and interview, or should I just withdraw? And so, you know, what do you make of this candidate? I offered them some advice on the site in a comment, but what do you have any thoughts? I mean, this is, you know, essentially there are four schools that are in the running, right? We've got Wharton, Columbia, Duke, and Cornell, and they have offers from two of them, and they're waiting on the other two. But what do you think? I mean, this is, I don't know, not an easy call, right? Especially with the deposits due.
Quite honestly, anyone listening to what you just said, Graham, would say, well, this person just needs to go to Columbia. And if Wharton comes through, then they've got a tough decision to make. They want investment banking. Columbia's in New York. Columbia's a very good program. They paid a whacking great deposit because they were early decision, right? So, but there is a bit of a wrinkle here, Graham. This person's an international student, from what I gather. I don't think they explicitly said that, but the OPT option that Duke provides is definitely something that's swaying their decision. A little bit of a scholarship from Duke too, I suppose, but Columbia hasn't made any scholarship decisions to this point, I don't think. I think they wait until
February
or something like that, right, to offer.
I want to just call them out on that because that deviates from so many of their peers. And I think it's like most candidates, you might get an admissions call on the phone and you find out, and then the admissions team will say, we don't have the scholarship info, but it'll come out in 2 days on the portal, you know. But this is like, it's a strange thing. So this person doesn't know if they have money from Columbia.
And Columbia does strange things. It doesn't do things the same as other schools. So this sort of binding early decision.
Yeah, well, different.
You know, there's a lot of debate on the fairness of a process like that, given that other schools don't do the same thing at the very top. So the schools that they're competing with and so forth. And then, you know, should candidates, you know, if they're admitted to Columbia early decision and pay the deposit, are they really bound to that deposit? What's the contract, and so on and so forth?
It's interesting because we're not even getting into that aspect of it here because, yeah, clearly the rules state, or quote rules, state that if you apply to Columbia ED and you get in, you're supposed to withdraw everywhere else and you're going, right? So now in practice, we don't really see candidates following that. And there's been debate over the years as to how binding it really is. But in any event, this candidate, I've kind of skipped that part because this candidate sort of, you know, basically like, look, I paid my deposit at Columbia, I have a slot there, and I'm willing to look at other options. And that is more the norm than, that is what we see, so.
Yeah, I mean, other candidates do the same thing. So and I think there's a debate whether that's ethical or not. And it's a debate. It's not a black and white, it is or it isn't. It's definitely a very debatable issue in of itself, and maybe in one of our podcasts we can just debate the pros and cons of something like that when we've got less other stuff to talk about. The issue here is this OPT, Graham. So my understanding, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is if you go to a program that's OPT3 or whatever the right terminology is, for an international student, it gives them the opportunity for a 3-year stay in the United States versus a 1-year stay before they turn whatever that visa situation is into something more permanent if they're wanting to stay or then returning home. So having that 3-year option has a lot of value.
Post-MBA.
Yeah, post-MBA to a candidate, which elevates the likelihood of selecting a school like Duke, Fuqua, over a school that doesn't offer that for an international student. So that's why in this day and age of a less friendly immigration environment, the candidates will look at these different options. Is that a fair assessment, Graham?
Yeah, I mean, the norm is, so for example, this person's in at Columbia, they could stay 1 year after they finish the MBA at Columbia, and work as an international, in the U.S. They have that right to work for 1 year, after which their employer would have to sponsor them. They try to get an H-1B or whatever visa it might be. Whereas if they go to Duke and do the track at Duke that is STEM eligible, in theory, they're eligible to stay for up to 3 years, assuming they can find a job that is also, you know, meets the STEM qualifications. And I mentioned that because I was actually on the phone today with an associate dean at a top MBA program who pointed out that that's not always a guarantee. So, you know, you have to make sure you find the right job after business school. But, you know, I think a lot of the kind of quantitative finance type jobs will qualify. But again, you have to make sure. But so that does, it raises a really good issue, because here this candidate is saying, look, Duke's willing to give me $30,000 to come to them, so it'll be cheaper. And I could potentially stay 3 years, which maybe, I don't know where this person's from, but imagine they're from a market where if they go home, their earning power is dramatically reduced. So suddenly they have 3 years to earn big US dollars and pay off their debt and get solid, you know, financial footing versus, you know, just 1 year and paying more to live in New York or go to Columbia. So I think it isn't as black and white as, you know, as you said at the outset, like that most people would say, oh, you just go to Columbia, they're the best for banking on your list, unless maybe you get into Wharton. So I think the thing that I was thinking about afterwards is that, you know, UGG Wharton also has some STEM eligible tracks in the quant, you know, domain of the MBA. And so obviously if they were to get into Wharton, which they'll find out any day now, right? Then that really makes it a different story. What do you think about Cornell though? Because Cornell's a school that places well in banking, and we don't know, like, should this person follow through and interview at Cornell, see if they get a scholarship, or what's your take there? Because I know that, you know, you're pretty familiar with Cornell's kind of finance placements and stuff. Yeah.
Just back very quickly to the Wharton issue. They're not going to hear from Wharton this week. It's going to be another week. And I think they indicated they got to pay a deposit at Duke pretty quickly. So it might be that they have to respond to Duke before they hear from Wharton, which, the end of the day, I know the person says they're not just made of money, but if you want to keep your option open, you're going to have to pay the deposit. That's just a, and if they're going to investment banking, they will get their money back if they're staying in the country for at least a year or 3 years. I mean, investment bankers get paid a ridiculous right. amount of money right. in my book for what they do, which is what, professional gamble? No, I shouldn't go into that. I'm kidding, obviously, but
no, come on now. No, but and actually because we've offered them such a good advice on the show, maybe they'll give us a percentage of their salary in those first couple of years, right?
Yes, that would be good. Yeah. That would probably triple my current income. That would be fantastic. But nonetheless, I mean, they got to think long run investment banking. Their salaries are going to be very good coming directly out. So the cost of an additional deposit currently is, you know, they should take it if they need to keep their option open at Duke. At Cornell, obviously Cornell has great relationships with investment banking directly in New York, and their internship program is very strong. Their yield from, you know, internships to full-time offers and so forth, they do very well. For the sake of you know, spending a day to go interview, because that's where they're at the stage that they're at right now, I think I would just go interview and keep that option open.
Yeah, that was my view. I say keep, you know, there's no, it's not, I mean, the big decision they have to make is, do I deposit at Duke? I think interviewing Cornell, like, why not? Just do the interview. Who knows? Maybe they get the Park, you know, fellowship, or there's some special, you know, who knows?
Yeah, they might get a full ride at Cornell. And then,
yeah, exactly.
You know, so I would absolutely encourage them to do that. If they get an offer at Wharton, that would be fantastic. They felt a little uneasy about how the TBD, team-based discussion interview went. Quite frankly, I wouldn't be that concerned about that. I'm not saying that Wharton's already made up their decision to admit you or not admit you before the interview. That would be silly to say. But, you know, Wharton's going to look at the entire application, including the TBD, as it makes its final decision, as do all other schools. So the influence of a less stellar interview might not be as dramatic or as impactful as some candidates might presume. I think this was a candidate that said they were a bit queasy about their Wharton interview. But yeah, nonetheless, keep your options open. If you're going into investment banking, if you're going into non-profit, probably the issues are different, because you're earning income after the MBA is going to be a lot lower, relatively speaking. So yeah, and for those listening, you can go to DecisionWire and weigh in yourselves and provide this candidate advice. That's one of the beautiful things about DecisionWire on the Undecided, is we tend to get lots of other candidates weighing in how they made their decisions, and some of the influences. And these are influences that are unique to candidates that sometimes we completely miss as admissions advisors. So the candidate perspectives are fantastic once decisions start coming in.
Yeah, we often see people who are currently in school, you know, who've been down the exact same road, made the same decisions. So, yeah, and if you're listening and you are, you know, soon getting admissions results and don't really know what your first choice is, and, you know, you can post to DecisionWire and we'll weigh in, and you'll get feedback from the community as well. The last thing I want to mention about this candidate, which I kind of indicated in the comments, but I asked them to think about, like, where they want to be, like, what kind of environment do they think they would thrive in as well? Because one thing that we haven't really said is, you know, in so much as we're talking about Columbia and then maybe Duke or Cornell, Duke and Cornell fall into a bucket that is, you know, kind of a smaller campus, or, well, large campus, but not in a big city, you know, so kind of rural, suburban type environments, really nice facilities, lower cost of living, close-knit, you know, very team-oriented, et cetera. You know, Columbia's, you know, obviously Ivy League, big city, access to all the employers, you know, high ranking. So they're just different environments. And so I was just telling this person, like, think about that as well. Like, if you think that you would thrive at Duke and, you know, you're an international, you're going to get 3 years to work in the U.S. afterwards, they're giving you $30,000. Like, it starts to, you know, the kind of pros and cons start to add up, right? So it's sort of, that's what I was trying to convince them or encourage them to do. It's just make sure they're thinking this through, because they're not the same. It's not going to be the same experience at all. And that's not to say that one is better than the other. I mean, I think obviously, you know, Columbia is a higher ranking program. They do great with banking. You know, people love Columbia. So I'm not trying to say one school's better than the other, but I just think it's important to think about where you're going to be for those 2 years. And, you know, again, this person just has a lot of different considerations, but I would err on the side of, like, depositing at Duke and keeping their options open. And, you know, worst case, if they get into Wharton or something and they're walking away from some money, at least they'll be doing it for a good, you know, good reason or something, right? So
finally, we don't know if this person's transitioning into investment banking or is coming from and to, and that affects the decision too, because maybe then it makes sense to be in New York City. And from a networking perspective, if you're having to build your network from zero, and you have an opportunity to be at Columbia, that's probably quite an attractive thing.
Exactly. I was actually lamenting the fact that we didn't have more info on this candidate. You know, we just have a GRE score, which isn't, you know, it's a decent score, but it doesn't tell me, like, oh, they might get into Wharton or not. It's, like, right on the line. So anyway, yeah, so we'll see how they do. Hopefully they'll follow up and let us know. They can just post to their DecisionWire entry and keep us all updated. But best of luck to them. Alex, I think we've hit the end of our allotted time. They're going to kick us out of the studio here.
Yes.
But yeah, thanks for picking, you know, a couple of ApplyWire and this one DecisionWire entry. I hope we do more of this going forward, because I love debating like where people should go based on all the factors. So it's really fascinating. And I just wanted to mention, you know, best of luck to everyone listening who's anxiously awaiting a decision. We know how stressful that can be. And yeah, wish everyone the best of luck. So Alex, I guess we'll see you next week for another episode of Wiretaps.
Yes, best of luck, everybody.
All right, thanks again. See you all soon.